a nasty night of weather, and it could be a repeat performance. It's apparently become the summer of 90-mile-an-hour winds. What in the world is going on? It won't be a repeat performance for the IRS commissioner next year. President Trump says, "You're fired," to Billy Long. And there will not be any more repeat performances for 14 local newspapers across the Midwest. Shuttered yesterday as the news industry tries to figure out the new world order. Good afternoon, my friend. Good to be with you here from Watford City, North Dakota today. It's August 8th, 2025, and the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy. And that's actually a very fitting introduction to our program today. It's going to be an interesting show, but I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a conversation today with Minnesota State Representative Lee Finke. Lee is a Democrat state House member from District 66A in St. Paul. And Lee Finke's representatives reached out to us a few weeks back and said, hey, think it'd be a good idea to get together and do an interview and just kind of see if there's any common ground, just have an honest conversation about some things. I said, absolutely. So we're going to do that today. We don't have a lot in common, but there are a couple things that we actually do. And we'll talk about that. Lee is the transgender lawmaker who has been one of the strongest voices in Minnesota politics for the LGBTQ community and all that goes along with that. We have very different politics, no question about that. And I'm interested in getting into that here today. I love conversations with people that are not like me. Because I'm curious how people are wired, how they got to where they are, and where they kind of landed on the positions that they have, and where they, what's happened along the way in their life that's led them to where they're at today. So I'm going to ask some pointed questions about legislature, spending, and lifestyle things as well. And in particular, very interested in some of the conversation that we can have about children and transgender sex change surgeries and so forth. So I'm looking forward to that today. We're going to have a good half hour or so with Lee today on the program. So this should be a very interesting program. But I will commit to anybody who comes on this show that it will not be an ambush. That's not how we do it here. We're going to ask questions. We're going to attempt to get some understanding at least. Even if we can't fully understand certain things. So we'll talk about that today. I do want to continue our conversation that we started yesterday about the growth of a city. And I'm interested if the city's growth should be something that we try to foster, or if growth should just be something that happens kind of by accident or sort of as a byproduct of whatever else we're doing here. Like, should it be a goal for Fargo to get bigger? Is that a good thing? Should we be working to try to find ways to make it bigger? I see this from both angles, to be honest with you, but I'm really looking forward to having this conversation with you. I got an email after the show today talking about my ramblings about police and safety in Fargo, and I made the point, sort of tongue-in-cheek, that if we had a police officer on every street corner, we wouldn't have much crime in Fargo. And he said, okay, figure out what that looks like. Is this even possible? So we'll talk a little bit about that. And is more police necessarily the answer? Yes and no, right? So none of these issues are easy, so we'll continue sorting through that today. We'll take a look back at yesterday's NFL action. Former Bison quarterback looking ready for prime time in the NFL and more. So let's get to it today with the 4 o'clock wrap semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire to catch you up on what has been a busy and eventful day. We start with the almanac for today, the 8th of August, 2025. And it doesn't feel much like summer out here in Watford City today. We're only in the mid-60s for high temps today. So it has been a chilly one here today. All right, the average high for this day is 82. Average low is 58. Record high, 101 back in 1958. Record low, 41 degrees. And that was back in 1964. In the markets today, CNBC tells us that it was a good day on Wall Street to finish the week. Dow was up 206 points, NASDAQ up 207, and the S&P 500 was up 49. WTI crude oil today down another 53 cents a barrel at $63.35. Gold today flirted with an all-time high for a little bit, ended up a little bit lower, but up about $5 an ounce at $3,458. Silver up 21 cents at $38.51. And Bitcoin today basically unchanged at $116,800. In the news today, we could have a repeat performance of that nasty weather that we had last night. Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki said, you better keep an eye on things here in the metro area between 7 and midnight, and then out in WeFest, especially between 9 and midnight, right when they're supposed to have all the big music going on, right? So we can look a little quieter, a little breezier. Temperatures and humidity is a little bit lower, but things could get tough here tonight. The forum reports that court documents detail an ongoing feud between two people who are in the crosshairs, I guess you could say, of this big spur in crime here that we've seen recently. Ciara Douglas and Tyreek Jones. Douglas has been arrested now in conjunction with one shooting that happened in Fargo late Saturday night. And Jones, who is still on the loose, who has been named as the suspect in another shooting that killed another man in downtown Fargo as well. There is a relationship that is apparently escalating, but we do not have a lot of details yet as to exactly what the relationship is or why the feud between the two is escalating or why they decided to act out the way they did on Saturday night and they didn't act out against each other. So information continues to come in, but very slowly, no doubt about that. WDAY Radio reports that Fargo is considering 9 locations for a new convention center. The three of the proposals are close to the West Acres Mall. 2 are downtown. 1 is at the Fargo Dome. So those are the locations there. Speaking of the weather, the Red River Valley Renaissance Fair has been canceled due to storm damage. And mud is changing things up at WeFest because they are losing some camping spots due to the mud there. So they're trying to figure all that out. By the way, they announced that Lainey Wilson will be the headliner for WeFest 2026. That's a big piece of news because she is a big name entertainer. CNBC reports that U.S. President Donald Trump is removing Billy Long as the commissioner of the IRS. Long was expected to be nominated for an ambassador post, but did not name the country. White House officials say Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, will serve as the acting commissioner of the IRS. CNBC reports that electric vehicle sales are soaring. People are trying to get out ahead of the tax credits expiring there. And consumers bought nearly 130,000 new EVs in July, the second highest month on record. And finally, dozens of communities in the Midwest and the western part of the U.S. learned today that they lost their newspapers after an Illinois-based publisher announced it is closing abruptly due to financial problems. News Media Corp. owns local newspapers across 5 states, said it'll close 14 operations, including 4 of them in South Dakota. I believe there was one in Brookings. I think there was one in Huron as well. There are, I think, 4 locations altogether, and definitely a change to the news landscape across the Dakotas. It's 4:16 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Short break for us. And when we come back, we're going to have a conversation unlike anything that we've ever done on this program. Lee Finke, the transgender Minnesota State Representative, joins us. We'll see if there's any common ground we can find between the two of us other than where we went to school. That's next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Card Care Systems is your best choice for an ATM partner. You just provide the location and Card Care Systems handles the rest. You get a share of the ATM fees with lower credit card processing as well. They sell and service ATMs for area businesses, and nobody provides better ATM customer service than Card Care Systems. Contact them to see if you qualify for their free 90-day placement program and start improving your bottom line today. Go to getmyatm.com. That's getmyatm.com. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness line today by Minnesota State Representative Lee Finke, a Democrat from St. Paul in District 66A. I'm thankful for the conversation today. I hope there can be something positive and constructive that comes of it. Now, Lee and I don't have a lot in common, but we do have a couple of things. We both grew up in Minnesota and attended Bethel University, so you can't say that we have nothing in common. Lee's representatives reached out and asked about having this conversation. I said, hey, it's a Friday, so let's have some fun. So Representative Finke, thank you very much for taking the time. Appreciate you being with us today.
I'm very happy to be here. Appreciate the invitation and looking forward to talking to another royal.
There you go. Well, I've always promised anyone who comes on the show that we're going to have a civil and respectful conversation, even if the questions are direct and maybe our positions are different. I believe with all my being that we're all God's children. The Lord doesn't love any of us more or less than anybody else on this earth. So we're all on the same level there. And I'm glad we get to do this today and have good conversation. So appreciate you doing this. First question, why did you ask your team to reach out to us at the flag to have this conversation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been doing my work in advocacy and activism for trans folks for a long time, you know, and I just think that the things that are being said and done these days just call for us to have a different kind of conversation. We should be toning down the rhetoric, having direct conversations. You know, I'm happy to talk to anyone. It sounds like you have the same principle, but something that doesn't really happen is that we don't just take the time to make sure we're sitting down together, right? So I just talked to some of the people who work at the House and said, I'd like to talk to some of the people who are completely on the other side of the issue of, you know, my existence and my healthcare, and just have a cordial conversation, because we get nowhere if we're not talking to each other.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You're probably right about that. We could not be any more polar opposite position than we are on this issue. But it doesn't mean we can disagree without being disagreeable, I guess is how I say it. So I'm going to ask you a few questions here as we go through the interview to understand a little bit more about that. I want to start, though, with your journey from childhood growing up into adulthood. What shaped your political philosophies as you went through life at a young age?
Yeah, that's... as you said, I grew up in Minnesota, right? I'm a child of the 80s and 90s here in the suburbs. And I wasn't a particularly political person in my young years. I didn't grow up in a household that was particularly political. I almost came out as queer in my teenage years, right? There was a sort of a period of exploring and trying to figure out sort of the differences that I felt in myself. And I really struggled, and I didn't feel safe. I didn't know. I didn't have the tools in front of me to really grasp how I thought that might go. And I became a conservative Christian instead, right? So about 16 years old, I joined the church. I became a person of deep faith, and have had an ongoing, complex relationship with that space ever since. And then I got to college at Bethel as a result of that and was sort of steeped in that culture. But it was really the Bush years that ended up pushing me into my political worldview. It was what I considered to be the illegal war in Iraq that moved me towards protest and towards organizing and activism. And I really have never let it go since then. Right. I got out of college. I went to grad school. I did a lot of organizing around progressive politics ever since. And that sort of is the foundation, you know? And then I became a journalist, covered social movements here in the Twin Cities, a lot of stuff around film and the arts, and then kind of transitioned into, you know, we had a series of high-profile killings of black men by police before George Floyd in Minneapolis. So it just sort of... You know, I kind of went further and further along as a reporter and as a media creator, following the place where these stories were leading me, which was, in my opinion, towards a progressive understanding of politics and of culture. Eventually ran for office, but that was sort of separately. Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of like the short version of it. You know, there's a lot more color there.
Of course. We could write a book, I'm sure. A lot of us had some concerns about the Iraq war, but most of us didn't turn into a transgender advocate. So how did you go from having the political concerns to here's where I am at with a whole list of social things that have nothing to do with political conflict?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had not transitioned at that point, right? Like I was at Bethel. I got married after Bethel, had a few kids. I had been pretty deeply closeted while I was participating in the church. And it took a long time. It was very hard. You know, I didn't I didn't think I want to be trans when I was in my 30s and blow up my life. You know, like things were at work inside of me in part of who I was and where my life was and how I was experiencing the world. So these two things sort of aren't necessarily correlative, right? My mm-hmm. progressive politics and my activism for LGBTQ folks and for abortion rights and for peace and nonviolence, those things were happening separately and from my gender and my transition that occurred. You know, obviously that has informed who I am, and I have experienced the world completely differently as a result of that. But being a trans activist, you know, I was an activist already, whether or not I was trans.
Excuse me if this question is personal. You don't have to answer it. But at any point along your journey, did you go through any sort of trauma, sexual assault or sexual violence against you or anything like that that maybe led you to kind of rock the foundation of being happily married, heterosexual to what you are now? Was there anything that acted upon you in a significant way that maybe changed your course in that fashion?
No. I when I was a young person, I have, you know, there's a thing that happens when you transition as an adult where you do a kind of audit of your history and your past, and you look and you think, how could this be happening? Like, what did I miss? What's the story? Where is this coming from? And you go back and you look over your life and it sort of makes sense to you, you know? It's like I've used the metaphor of discovering gravity where, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know, but as soon as I knew it had always been true. Right? Like we knew gravity made sense to understand the universe, but we didn't know that until we knew it. And then the self-evident, obvious nature of it became clear. And that's really what my transition was like. So sorry about my dog. You know, my transition, it took me by surprise only until it didn't, you know, and then it was pretty clear.
Do you still have a faith in God?
Yes.
How do you reconcile with what Scripture teaches about this with your transgender lifestyle? How do you kind of balance those two if you still have that faith story?
Yeah, I don't. I don't worry about it. You know, I think that, you know, I have a different understanding of how Scripture and holiness and what is sacred and what it means to participate in the sacred. You know, there are many LGBTQ Christians around the world. You know, we understand the Scriptures to mean what they mean, and I have no problem, being myself, carrying my spiritual life, into all aspects of my world.
Is there a doctrine or Scripture that you find that supports the lifestyle that you have right now? Is there a verse that you cling to or a passage that matters to you?
You know, I tend to think of what Jesus has to say rather than what everyone else has to say. And I don't find there to be great conflict regarding who I am and how I live and what my life means. If anything, you know, one thing I like to talk about with people in the Scriptures is about like Old Testament prohibitions, because there's a lot of Old Testament prohibitions and we make of them what we will. But for me, there's a real sense of comfort in them because it's to me a signal of trans people living in the times when those prohibitions were made. And that to me actually brings me a great amount of joy, right? Like we wouldn't have the prohibitions unless people were queer, unless people were doing the things that were being prohibited, unless queer communities were gathering together in those cities and in those cultures. Of course, power has never embraced queer people in human history, but I do appreciate finding in Scripture even little signals of our communities and in the gathering that we were doing.
Yeah, the whole theological conversation I think is fascinating, and I'm probably not as equipped to have it as others. where you kind of get into all the nuts and bolts. I've read a lot about Jesus coming to be the new covenant to clarify the Old Testament and not to change it. But again, that's a conversation that would take us a long time, and we probably have other things that we want to do here. We are at 4:30 right now. Lee, thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to take a short break. We got a news and weather update here, and we'll be back to continue the conversation with Representative Lee Finke from St. Paul. We're going to talk to a little bit when we come back about the issue of children and making decisions for our children as opposed to people that are of majority age. And so we'll get into that with Representative Lee Finke when we continue on the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're continuing our conversation with State Representative Lee Finke out of District 66A in St. Paul, kind of right in between Minneapolis and St. Paul. And we're visiting a little bit today about political differences, social issue differences. And in particular, we're talking about some of the transgender conversations that are going on in our community. And I applaud Representative Finke for saying, hey, let's get together, let's have civil conversations, try to understand each other a little bit better and kind of take down the temperature. So I appreciate that. Lee, I want to ask you about your advocacy for children and young people to pursue sex change surgeries, transgender treatments, however you want to say that. You made the decision to transition to a trans individual in your adult years, well after college. You were married, you said, had children, yet you have become a big voice for children going through this now. Why, I just have to ask, why would we, at a time when children are, I mean, none of us know what we want to be when we're 12, 13, 15, 16 years old, why would we want to even allow the possibility, not for our 21-year-olds or 30 or 40-year-olds, but our children, I'll say at 13 years of age, to go through genital mutilation, hormonal overhauls, when nobody has any idea what that child's going to be, and the child certainly has no idea at that age as well?
Well, I would dispute the framing of your question, right? I think that I'm not an advocate for child sex change, right? I'm a proponent of healthcare. Responsible healthcare for people of all ages. Transition-related healthcare is healthcare, and people who are trans know that they are trans. And, you know, if I had transitioned when I was 15, if I had made the decision instead of using, you know, an early 90s fear that I had with no concept of transness, no concept of where what a transgender identity even was at that time. I would have been thrust into a world where there simply wasn't a frame set to support me with healthcare and in my family and in my society around me. And we don't live in that world anymore. We live in a world where we understand what trans identity means, right? It is a diagnosis, gender dysphoria. It is a part of the human experience. There are trans people. There always have been transgender people throughout all of human history, as we discussed. And when people have healthcare decisions to be made, I believe it is the individuals, their doctors, and their families who should be making those healthcare decisions. I believe that is true of all healthcare. And I don't believe that we treat trans healthcare in any way similar to any other form of healthcare in America. I will also say that 12 and 13-year-olds are not having surgeries, gender-affirming surgeries. They are maybe on puberty blockers, or their gender-affirming care could be simply mental health care, affirmation, social transition, support systems. Gender-affirming care is a very broad term, or transition health care, depending on what term one uses. It means very many things besides surgery.
But that can't be part of the equation, though, Representative Finke.
It can be, but not at 12 and 13. That's not a thing.
But those are done. Those processes and procedures are done in this country at children of that age.
I mean, I've never encountered that in my work. The reality of, you know, you could not have a bottom surgery at 12 years old. That's not a thing. And what we have to do is understand what is and isn't happening. Like, I understand that your position is that children should not have access to puberty blockers, and to hormone replacement therapy, and then eventually transition-related surgery. And I can grant that as a political position, but people can't have a gender assignment surgery when they're 12 or 13 years old. Like, that's not a thing. When you're an older teenager, there are certain things that can be done, and I believe those are the decisions made by families and doctors. But we do have to sort of ground ourselves in what we're actually talking about, and that's not it, what we're talking about.
So at 12 or 13, perhaps it's much more rare, uncommon, I don't know, but why would it be different for a 16 or 17 or 18-year-old? We know that the brain development of people that age is not anywhere near complete at that point. We don't know what they're going to be. And there are now examples of young people who have said, I wish I would have never done this. So whether it's 12, 13, or 16, or 17, how do we expect that children are going to know what they are going to be when we don't know anything about what we're going to be when we're that age? When you're 21, I get it. You're free to make decisions, do what you want. I can disagree with it. It can sadden me, but you should have the ability to do that. Why push this, and why are we so eager to give children surgeries, blockers, hormones? Why can we not leave the children out of it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not pushing it. First of all, I don't believe in pushing anything on anyone, right? There are trans people, and those people make healthcare decisions that are in accordance with what they need for their well-being,
why would we allow for it even to be possible for those young people to have those things done?
Sure. What we have a wide amount of data about what it means to provide gender affirming care and what it means to withhold it. We know that less than 1% of people who have access to gender affirming care end up having regret. Most of the people who do have regret because of a lack of social acceptance and not actually as a result of their transition. We know that at any age, when people transition, you know, their outcomes in life are, you know, beyond, I mean, the improvements in our well-being is almost beyond measurable. And I think it's important that way, you know, when we say pushing, when we say you're forcing things or rushing people into things, that's not how we talk about healthcare, right? This is a landscape of healthcare experienced by a small group of people, 1% of the country. And they have autonomous decision-making as families and physicians and doctors to determine a course of care for patients. And whether that child is 16 or whether that adult is 35, they are not likely, and we know this because we have researched this, they are not likely to regret that decision later. And when we say something like you've said a couple times, we don't know who we are, right? Like, oh, we don't know anything about ourselves. I think that kind of equates who we are fundamentally in our identities with a sort of passing fate of like, I liked playing baseball and now I don't like playing baseball, right? Like, who we are is something separate from we don't know what job we want to have when we grow up, or I used to smoke and then I quit smoking because I grew out of it. There isn't evidence of a widespread detransition effort that happens later in life. We know what it means for trans people to access healthcare, and we know what it means to deny that healthcare. And for me, as a politician and as an advocate and as a trans woman, I'm going to always be on the side of saying we should have the full slate of healthcare options to keep young people healthy and alive. And there are trans people. If there are trans people, they should have access to the healthcare that will do that. The only way it makes sense to me that we get to a position where we take all this away is that we simply deny that there are trans people. And if we say there are no trans people, we're having a different conversation. But if there are transgender people and youth, then we need to have health care access to keep them alive.
Okay, so let me understand this then, Representative Finke. If you are saying that there are people that were born, I'm going to maybe use the wrong terminology, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but born into the wrong gender, for instance, and I should have been, in your case, I should have been a woman all along and a girl. I was born with male biology. then we are saying that God makes mistakes and God makes errors. And if you were telling me that I have a Christian faith and you have a relationship with the Lord, then you're admitting that God made the most incredible mistake of who you are at the very beginning of your formation. How do you reconcile those two?
I don't reconcile that. I don't think that we should be making determinations about the landscape of legal healthcare access based on individual religious values. I do believe that your opinion that you expressed about how you understand creation is valid and valuable. And I also don't think it's relevant to whether or not doctors should be able to exercise a treatment plan for a patient that is agreed upon by families, patients, and doctors. I don't need to reconcile that. My values around that have no bearing on whether that should be available.
Fair enough. And we can agree to disagree on many things and continue to have the conversation here. So we'll do that. How can we be sure that children might not fully understand the long-term impacts and consequences of all of the things we're talking about, surgeries, hormonal treatments, puberty blockers, compression shorts, all of those things? How do we know that children understand, or how can we be sure that they do what they're really doing at those ages?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I actually don't think that's a trans-specific question. I think that that's a question of how do we make decisions with and for children as people who love our children, right? As parents, as caregivers, as doctors. You know, when you are going through a treatment plan for gender-affirming care, it is long, it is slow, it takes a very long time to go from my child told me that they're trans, I don't know what to do, to prescribing hormones, for example, let alone to discussing surgeries. That's usually years later, right? It's years. Even for adults, it's sometimes 5-10 years before we are able to achieve our transition goals, because the process is actually astonishingly slow. And I think that this is something else that gets lost in the conversation. So a child could wear, you know, a binder, and they can feel it. It's social transition, right? It may or may not be something that affirms them. And then if they have appropriate, responsible decision-making forces in their lives who are affirming them and who are wanting that child to be their fullest self, they will explore it. And they may continue or they may not continue. And they may not continue and then pick it up a year later and try it again and see how it feels. This is a very real form of healthcare, and it is administered responsibly. If it is administered irresponsibly, then we're having another conversation. Irresponsible doctors are a problem. They're not a problem. Yeah. So I think it's really a question of we need to be careful and thoughtful about our kids and see that they're going through responsible healthcare. And if they are, those things will be done.
And my perspective on this is different, obviously, Lee, and I believe that God has a perfect plan for humanity and he did not make a mistake. And therefore, for you to have the beliefs that you have is damaging to children. And you seem like a sincere and thoughtful person as I visit with you, but I feel that the ideas that you're bringing are evil. And nowhere else than from the satanic kingdom that confuses and damages our children, and in many cases alters them physiologically with the treatments that we try to put on them. So when you say healthcare, that's hard for me because I feel like what you're talking about is not healthcare, and I don't feel that gender-affirming care affirms the true gender of the child. So it is difficult to have these conversations when at the very foundation of what we believe, I believe that you seem to be a good person, but the ideas that you have are so destructive and so confusing to our children, it's going to lead them to, maybe not every case, but in most cases will lead them to difficult, painful relationships and situations down the line. Can you and I still be friends as we have these conversations and I feel the way I do and you feel the way you do?
You know, I don't know if we can, right? I don't. It's not easy to end a conversation by being called evil and saying that I, you know, if you don't think that that's possible, then you're saying I'm not a transgender person, right? You're saying that what I'm doing is embodying a form of evil. And I don't know how to maintain friendships in that space. And that's why I think these conversations are important. Because there are transgender people. Always have been, always will be. Your religious perspective about the existence of transgender people is a thing, and I grant it for you, right? But to say to us our actual existence is a manifestation of evil and that we should not be able to access. And I appreciate you saying that because it gets rid of this idea that it's only for children, right? Like, it also was for adults. If you believe that it's evil, then there shouldn't be trans adults either. We should just call what we're talking about, which is that we are happy, we are healthy, we are alive, we have families and communities and jobs and exist fruitfully in the cultures that we inhabit. And the perspective that we are evil would say we shouldn't be in any of those spaces. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And again, I think from all accounts and visiting with you, you seem sincere and thoughtful. But the enemy is a deceiver. And I believe that what is happening in this whole movement is people are being fooled by a force of darkness that is leading us to taint especially how we grow up as children. And while I will grant anybody the freedom to do what they want to do with their bodies at 21 years of age or after 18, whatever the age is, it's harder for me when we're talking about the teenage ages. I do want to give you a chance before we finish up here to just say any final thoughts you have. We are coming to a close in the amount of time that we have here, but what would you like to say that I haven't asked you about?
I mean, I appreciate this conversation, Steve. It does really bring me pleasure to be able to have new conversations.
I think
that's what we need to be doing. You know, I believe you when you say you sincerely hold the values that you do and that, you know, people over 21 should be able to make the decisions that we want to make. And I would just reflect back that I believe that within a year or two, we will be having our rights as adults to lose our healthcare. So I will hope that, you know, you will argue for at least adults to be able to access the healthcare we have, because they're not stopping at children. At the end of the day, I don't believe that the anti-transgender movement that's coming now is about children. I believe it is about transgender people. And if we can agree that adults should have autonomy and authenticity over their lives, we will need you to help us next year.
I wish for you that you have many happy and joyful days. As I mentioned, you seem a delightful person and that you are doing what you think is best in a sincere way and trying to make life better for people that you believe need to have a hand in this world. And for that, I respect you. I do. And we can have a lot of disagreements, but I think I have to give respect to people who do what you did, reaching out to come on to have this conversation, even though you knew the questions might be difficult. And I will just say that I will continue to hope for joy and happiness in your life in the days ahead. And maybe we'll visit again sometime, Lee, but I do thank you for doing this today.
I appreciate it. And I'm always available. You know, okay. We got to keep talking. Thanks, Steve.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you, Lee. Representative Lee Finke from District 66A in the Twin Cities. Short break for us. Come back, Steve Halsham Show. If you've got a comment, you want to add something, you want to give me a critique on how that went, I'd be certainly happy to do that. Steve Halsham Show continues right after this. All right, a couple minutes left here before the top of the hour. I enjoyed that a ton. It's not easy to have conversations like that when I am, as I think I've told you this a few different contexts, but I see the best in people, and I pray that God gives me a spirit to love people. And so when I speak to someone like that, I think, boy, what a well-spoken, effervescent person, thoughtful and seemingly kind-hearted. And then I am reminded that beneath it all is this philosophy and this worldview that we are going to allow our children who have no capability of understanding what they're doing to themselves when they're teenagers, many years down the line, we're going to allow them to mutilate themselves, chemically alter their systems, in many cases lose the ability to reproduce. So it's hard to kind of balance those two. I want to be civil to this person, but I can't hear that as a believer and not say this is an evil worldview and philosophy. And not that I think Lee Finke is an evil person, but as I mentioned, the enemy is a deceiver. And to the line about we're going to need you to help us protect, I'll never fight for something that is anti the principles of God. It's just different to me. If you want to do that to yourself at age 21, you should have more freedom to do that than what we do to our children at age 13. But it doesn't mean I'm cheering on people to go through these things at age 40 either. Interesting your thoughts on that. Light Friday conversation, right? Hour number two of the program continues right after this. Hour number two on this Friday afternoon as we get set to wind down the week here, but still a lot to do. And I have what I hope to be a good conversation queued up for you in the second half hour of the program today. Should the growth of your city be a goal? Should we be trying to make our cities larger? Is that a good thing, bad thing, or doesn't it really matter? Or is growth just a byproduct? And is it not something to aim for? I think about this a lot with diversity, too. And I don't know that I have the right answer on this one. I happen to like a lot of diversity in the communities that I live. I do. I like to have racial diversity, I guess. I tend to prefer that everybody goes to church on Sunday morning, but that's just me. But I love it when you get different people that grew up in different places and they come to the country, they bring their traditions with them, their backgrounds, perspectives, the culture, fine arts, food, and all that. I think variety is the spice of life, and I love it. I'm thankful the church I go to has a lot of diversity in it. Just many, many different skin colors and hues, and I feel like that's what heaven's going to look like someday. So I do enjoy that, but should it be a goal? I've always kind of wrestled with, like, is it something to say that having a lot of diversity necessarily makes your community better? Or is it just a byproduct of having a healthy community? And I think growth is another one of those subjects. So we'll talk about that here in the program. We will, in our next segment as well, do a little bit of a debrief on the conversation with Lee Finke today as well. I've got a bunch of emails and texts coming in about the chat that we had today. And thank you for your reaction there. So we'll do that, put a couple of finishing touches on that. But it is time for the top five of five. These are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the top five at five. I'm going to start with one that probably means a lot more to me than it does to you. I am in the newspaper business. In fact, I'm coming to you from Watford City, North Dakota today, the heart of McKenzie County, in oil country. And we are seeing in the newspaper world a very different story than we're seeing unfold in talk radio. Talk radio stations are doing, there's challenges, yes, but they are doing much better than newspapers are. Newspapers are having a really, really, really hard time. The problem is the newspapers in many communities are the only local source of news. And because we've gone from a society where we don't hold a newspaper in our hand anymore, we look at things online, and a few other social factors as well, newspapers are falling quickly and in big numbers. And so story number one today is one that makes me go, oh boy. But dozens of communities across the Midwest have lost their newspapers as of this morning after an Illinois-based publisher, News Media Corp., announced it is closing completely because of financial difficulties. It owns local newspapers across five states, and it says we're going to close 14 operations in Wyoming, 7 in Illinois, 5 in Arizona, 4 in South Dakota, and 1 in Nebraska. Brookings and Huron, for sure, in South Dakota are two of them. There's two others. News media's closure affects a lot of places that were often the primary source of news in small towns. And we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting closing down that there are going to be more and more big swaths of middle America and probably the coast too that are losing local news coverage. They call them news deserts. I kind of roll my eyes a little bit at some of the terminology, but you get what I mean. The United States has lost more than a third of its print newspapers and two-thirds of its newspaper journalists in the last 20 years. There has been changing readership. Landscape of revenue is very different. Advertising as a whole is way more competitive than it was back in 2004. You have economic uncertainties in our country right now in particular, and businesses that are, generally speaking, optimistic about the future are saying, I don't know if I want to do that same ad campaign that I did last year. And that's hitting, I think, a lot of industries, whether it's TV, radio, newspaper. Expenses are growing by the day. And you can tell me all you want about the inflation rate is 2.7 or whatever. All I know is if you can find a receipt from going to Walmart 5 years ago versus what you're looking at today, you're looking at 5 to 10% increases in costs of everything over the last 5 to 10 years or so. And for many local newspapers, continuing business is no longer feasible. They have cut back, they have cut down, they have shortened everything, they've tried to find revenue where it is. It's very difficult. Hundreds of employees were fired basically on the spot this morning. And the company is saying, we will make, quote, reasonable efforts to pay you the remaining compensation you've earned. So that paycheck you thought you were getting, probably not going to happen there. In Brookings, listen to this story. Now, this is South Dakota State University in Brookings, South Dakota, right? Less than a year ago, their local radio station shut down as well because they're going through similar difficulties. So in the span of 12 months, they lost their newspaper and they lost their radio station. There's Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram out there, but it's sort of a fork in the road because you've got an older generation that doesn't use a lot of that. They just want to have a newspaper in their hand. And then you've got young people who are getting enough news from enough places. They don't feel like they need to subscribe or buy access to news. They figure they'll just get it somewhere sooner or later. So at our newspaper in Watford City, we've talked a lot about how do we create content that you have to have. And that could be its own two-hour radio program. But I just, to me, this is one of those things that made me go, oh, for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I grew up in the newspaper age, and I still love to have something in my hand when I read it. And then second of all, I'm in this business, and it's getting harder and harder all the time. Expenses continue to soar. And businesses are fighting their own economic battles right now. They don't always have the revenue for advertising. So an interesting story, but one that is definitely hitting me hard this week, no doubt about that. WDAY Radio reports the city of Fargo is considering 9 locations for a new convention center. 3 of the proposals are close to West Acres Mall. 2 are downtown. 1 is at the Fargo Dome. There's also a location on 52nd Avenue South, just west of I-94, 32nd Avenue South near Shields Arena, and the southwest corner of the interchange between I-29 and 94. The deadline was August 7th, so all the proposals are in, and the city will post publicly all the proposals of the city's website for all the public input. Previously, Jim Gilmore told our newsroom that a short list is going to be coming out with about a month, in about a month, with about 3 to 5 finalists. The storms we had last night, and it looks like we might get them again, wreaking havoc on the weekend entertainment scene. That's story number 3. At WeFest, they lost some campsites, so they're scrambling to find room for people. And the Red River Renaissance Fair has been canceled as well due to the heavy rain and storm damage that was sustained to their site. So that's too bad. They work all year, and finally the event comes around and storm takes you out. Yowza. Story number 4 is one about electric vehicles, and this is a story that is always interesting to watch. EV sales soared in the second quarter as the tax credits are about to hit the chopping block. People are rushing out to buy. The so-called Big Beautiful Bill ends a $7,500 EV tax credit after September 30th. So consumers are acting quickly to claim the tax credit before it disappears. And finally, call it the Trump effect, shares of Apple, which over time they've done great, but recently, last year or so, they've been a little sluggish compared to some other big tech names. The shares of Apple rose 13% this week, its largest weekly gain in more than 5 years. What changed this week with Apple? Well, they promised that they were going to spend another $100 billion domestically in manufacturing and development. They'd already pledged $500 billion, so you wouldn't think that would be a big deal. Well, you probably know what the answer is. CEO Tim Cook appeared with President Trump in the White House on Wednesday. That was when he made the big announcement about spending now $600 billion in America and buying American parts over the next 4 years. And the company says it's going to buy more American semiconductor chips. And the president has said that Apple would be exempt from future tariffs that could potentially double the price of those chips. So Tim Cook comes to the White House, talks about increased investment. President says, we're going to exempt you from some of the tariffs. And Apple's stock price goes up 13%. You guys, whether you like Donald Trump or not, really you have to forget about that and look at Donald Trump as a change maker and a catalyst, because there has been nobody in business in my adult lifetime that is able to create billions and trillions of dollars of swings in things just by saying a few things or doing a few things like this guy can do them. He knows it, and he can manipulate these markets with the tariff talk and the trade conversations. He knows what's going to happen, and he plays it like a guitar. And here is Apple now, probably kissing the ring a little bit, saying, hey, you know, let's get this thing figured out. Now we've got trade deals with the EU and Japan and other places as well. Donald Trump makes things happen, and that should be a nightmare for you if you are a liberal. Did you listen to what Lee Finke said toward the end of that interview? Lee Finke is clearly very, very nervous about the Trump administration and what is going to happen with transgender rights and what he calls gender-affirming care. I won't use that term because I don't think it's accurate. But he is scared to death of what's going to happen, not even with just children, but with adults as well. So if you're on the side of Donald Trump in one way or another, these are good days for you. If you're not, these are very nervous times. And that is story number five, friends. And those are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. They transcend just headlines and today's news. I was going to say newsprint because we were talking about newspapers. But today's headlines and news pages. So that is the top five at five for today, August 8th, 2025. When we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show, your thoughts and your reaction to small town newspapers leaving the scene or the conversation we just had with Lee Finke. And can you say that someone's a good person, but they happen to have evil philosophies? I think I just did it. We'll talk about that too when we come back. Don't go away. More than 20 million adults a year are injured in the bathroom. Some people have reservations about resale value. And if you're thinking about selling your home in the next year or two, then worry about resale. But if your goal is to stay in your home as long as possible, then modifying your home can be financially wise. Thing is, average nursing home cost is more than $9,000 a month. But one in four Americans, 65 and older, fall each year. And you know what the number one spot that happens? Stepping over the tub in the bathroom. So StyleSafe believes the bathroom is the first place to start. StyleSafeFargo.com. They've done more than 1,000 jobs locally since opening in 2010. Let's go back to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Tom is on the line. He wants to weigh in on our conversations today. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Steve. Just I'm going to finish up what I started yesterday on the 15 seconds.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Tony, yeah. So between Dave Pepcorn, Michelle Turnberg, and Tony Gehrig, if they're not, you know, this one guy said there's no hope, there's no more hope for Fargo. that those three men, the two men and woman, they're fighting hard. They're fighting hard for Fargo. And I think it's completely wrong. And you and I both know, as it is in the Bible, it's darkest before the dawn.
Yes.
So I think it also goes along with newspapers. I think it's sad. It's extremely sad. It goes back to, it's maybe not the leadership, but it's a sad we're losing so many things that made this country good. Newspapers were one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one last thing, I'm on Trump's side for the quote unquote healthcare stuff that is going on.
Which healthcare stuff, Tom? Sorry, I'm not following you.
The operations for the kids and such.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I
didn't even get a chance to ask about athletic competition, and I did have that on my list of things to ask about, but we just had too many questions and not enough time. But I'd be curious to know if Representative Finke thinks that it is fair for biological males to participate in women's sports. That, I think, is what I hear Trump really sounding off about more than anything else. I've not heard him talk a lot about trans surgeries with kids and things like that, but he's really landed hard on this idea of competitive equity with male and female. And I'm glad he's done it, because you're seeing the NCAA and the Olympics and Ivy League swimming teams and all that saying, yeah, we can't do that anymore. So there are some good things happening, Tom. Thank you very much for calling, buddy. Right. I appreciate it. Have a good rest of the day.
Right.
It says, I try not to take you to church too much in this show, because I know a lot of people that's not your thing, but I can't help it. My relationship with the Lord is everything, and I have nothing without Him. I am nothing without Him. And when you start there, it's just hard to think about things through any other lens. I was thinking today when I was listening to Lee Finke talk about, trans, they know they're trans from the very beginning of time, even though he didn't, I guess, in his case, but just saying that there's no question that there are trans people. I don't even know how to start with that. Are you saying that there's no question there are people that are confused? Absolutely. I mean, sexual confusion and sexual distortion is massive. And I would equate this a little bit to that when Lee Finke is talking about, you said I was evil. No, I didn't. But what you're espousing is, I think you can be a good person and still get tied up in things that are evil. Talk about sexual confusion, the porn industry, right? I mean, there's a lot of good human beings that are hopelessly addicted to porn. Every walk of life, you'd say good people, they're sitting in the front row of church, you'd never get in trouble. But the porn is the evil thing. It's dark, and it leads to damage. It leads to destruction in one way or another, and this is how I feel about Representative Finke. I think Lee Finke, I said a few times, kind, sincere, genuine, really trying to do the right thing. But Lee Finke has been fooled, in my opinion, by the enemy, who's really good at that. It says in Scripture, Psalm 139, "For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." It's really hard for me to reconcile those words against what I heard from Representative Finke today. You'll notice I did not ever say he or she in that interview. Lee is a male. Lee is not a she. Lee is a he. But I didn't want to insult him either and say he, because that's not how he identifies now. So I'm trying to be cordial about the whole thing. But when you hear words like that, that does not, it's one or the other. You either believe those words from Psalm 139 or you believe what Lee Finke said. And I'm not going to judge anybody by saying your faith walk is a fake and you're a phony when it comes to your faith. But he says he's a Christian, he's a believer, believes in God, but it kind of sounded like me and God sort of have an understanding. And that's not the sort of relationship with God that I feel like you can have, because it's either got to be all God or nothing, like I've said before, it's got to be a square meal, not a buffet table. You can't pick and choose what you want, because now your religion is only as deep as your mental understanding and your acceptance of what you see there. Then it's your religion. And now, like, I wouldn't want to, you know, create a religion after what Steve Hallstrom thinks, because it would crash and burn fairly quickly. So you either believe that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, that we are knit together in our mother's womb, and that he created our inmost being, or you don't. And in some respects, it's kind of hard to really think you're going to gain a lot of common ground with Representative Finke when I believe that, and he believes something that's very different. I will say this. I believe that Lee Finke and I could have a beer, get along fine, maybe even be friends in social settings. Because I don't hate Lee Finke. I don't judge Lee Finke. I think Lee Finke's ideas, yes, there's some evil in them, but have I lied? Have I sinned? Have I done? Absolutely. We've all done those things. And I think that's where I really respect Lee for saying, let's get off the couch and let's have conversations. And Jesus went to the dark and ugly places too. And so I did appreciate the conversation today, if for no other reason that it just kind of led me to think about some things more clearly and just kind of weigh in on some of those things with you here today, kind of be reminded of why I feel how I feel. Steve from the text line, Steve, I'm no fan of Lee Finke, but you had your specific questions and he had his specific answers and nothing turned into an argument. I also appreciate how you gave Lee the final comment in regard to anything you asked or didn't ask. Good interview. Thanks for doing it, John. John, thank you for that. Steve, you did an amazing job with that interview. It was interesting that Lee interpreted what you said as trans people are evil. The deception is the evil. Our hearts deceive us, says so in Jeremiah 17:9. 100%. We live in this all or nothing world these days, though. The problem is, and people want to say it's all this or it's all that. Like, there are so many people that think Donald Trump either walks on water or he is the Antichrist. And there's very few people in the middle. And you can look at that with a lot of different things. And that's exactly what I said. The trans people are not there are no evil people. But there are ideas and there are worldviews that I believe are destructive to our children. And that there is an element of evil to that, no question. Steve, in order for health care, you would have to be sick of some illness. Using medical care to transform a human gender is nothing more than making a sick person a permanent customer for medical reasons. If they stop taking the meds to help them feel transformed, it will not make a transformed sex without the meds. I think I followed that. I think we are in many ways creating sick people permanent customers, because those people are going to have mental and physical therapy needs for the rest of their life. No question. I'm happy that Lee Finke seems full of joy and that there's not any conflict and there's no second thoughts. You have to wonder, though I do. Steve, sex changes on any minor is sexual mutilation and sexual abuse. It's criminal. It's the opposite of health care at any age. First, do no harm. Maybe people who think they are not the sex they were born as need mental help and a dose of reality for their own good, not people who allow and affirm the mental illness. Yeah, I thought about that a lot, too. And I asked the question about, have you had any kind of, you know, traumatic sexual experience along the way that damaged you? Because if you talk to people in social work or people in Christian counseling, they'll tell you that many people who are in this trans thing have had some sexual abuse at an early age or something that happened to them. But I don't want to sit there with the person, you know, on the phone either and say, you know, you're mentally ill. So again, just trying to be cordial, we can have these conversations without name calling and all of those things there. Steve, did he say that gender dysphoria was a thing and then the cause? Oh, so he did say that the gender dysmorphia was a thing and the cause of the trans push, and then danced around the question about why focusing on the kids. I'd like to know what study he's using for his numbers on people not regretting transitioning and detransitioning. 100%. 100%. Me too. Because you hear that, well, we've got studies that show, and there are so many times now we find out those studies are faulty or flawed or incomplete or, you know, asked with leading questions. Back to the email. And if after a transition, then why is the suicide rate so incredibly high for his own community? I don't have those stats. I should have. would have been a good question. He keeps dancing around the questions and won't answer straight. And why is his sexuality his entire being? It seems like it's all these people have. That's from Chris. Thank you, Chris. And one more here from Pastor Howard at Crossroads Christian Fellowship in Moorhead. Steve, I'm listening to your conversation. Someone said we are all children of God. I hear this quite often. I have to correct people. While it's true that we're all created in the image of God, we are not all children of God. John chapter 1, verse 12 and 13 clearly states, but as many as received him, Jesus, to them he gave power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Meaning only those who have received him, Jesus, qualify to become a child of God. This is clearly referring to having to be born again, as Jesus described in John chapter 3. So to be a child of God, one must be born again, from Pastor Howard. Pastor Howard, I think you're right, technically. You're a man of the cloth. You've obviously gone to seminary, and I imagine you're right. But I still want to say that we're all God's children. And maybe I'm just using that loosely. I don't know. But I do believe, as I said earlier at the beginning of the interview, I don't think God loves me any more or less than Lee Finke. The worst child molester, pedophile, rapist, whatever, God doesn't love me any more than that person. I think he looks at us as all his kids. And some of us stray around. Some of us mess it up. We all mess it up. But some of us try to get back to where we're supposed to be. I hear you, Pastor. You're probably right, but I'm going to go with my story on this one. We're all children of God, but you're correct in your theology there, I think, 100%. Thank you, Pastor Howard, for sending that in. All right, we got a check of news and weather, and then I do want to get to our other topic that I can't wait to get into with you today. Should the growth of your city be a goal? Should it be a stated objective that we want to grow Fargo? Or West Fargo, or Moorhead, or Watford City, where I'm at today. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. I would like to hear from you today about this one question. Should growing a city be a goal of the city? Is it something to aspire to be a bigger city than you are today? You know, one of my favorite episodes from Yellowstone, the TV series, which should have had like five more years. I was just getting into it, and then it was done. Actually, they might be making some more. I have to bone up on it. But anyway, the first season, when John Dutton was running for governor of the state of Montana in the show, he said, I'm not about progress. I am the place that progress hits its head on and dies, or something like that. And he was making the point that in the state of Montana, they didn't want it to turn into a tourist paradise and everybody moving here from California. He wanted to keep Montana simple and rural and wide open spaces and traditional. And so I've thought about that a lot with the city of Fargo, the conversations that we've had, because it's one of the offshoots of the crime conversation that comes up when you say, gosh, you know, we've got problems as a city has grown. You get more of everything, more of the good, more of the bad. And a lot of people have taken this opportunity to say, I don't like it that Fargo is growing. And why are we trying to grow? Why should we do that? So here's how I look at it. I don't think the growth in and of itself is good or bad. I think it's just a characteristic. I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but it's something that's sort of the product of everything else happening. And if you're located in a good place and you happen to benefit from demographic trends, people moving out of the country and into the city or whatever else, you know, then you end up growing. And if you have a city that people want to be a part of, there's good things happening, you get the growth that comes along with it. But growth, I think, just happens kind of by its own and on its own. I don't know that it should be a goal to get bigger. The goal of your city should be to get better. Now, I will say that part of growing is having more of everything. And yes, crime is part of that. If you go from a city of 50,000 people to a city of 100,000 people, you're going to have more crime because you have more people. But you're also going to have more people who are not criminals that aren't committing crimes and will be doing good things. I look at NDSU and going Division I sports and NDSU growing the way it has and its profile growing. Has that been good for Fargo? I don't know. It hasn't been bad. It's given us some really fun experiences if you like sports, and many of us do. So that's a good thing, although not everybody will get behind it. But we've had more people come to town for games. Back in the old Division II days, they were drawing 10,000 people for a home football game. Well, now it's 18. So that's good. As the campus has gotten bigger population-wise, student-wise, that brings more kids in, more families in, and things spring up around that. The Fargo Dome itself has been a really, I think, neat feature for this community. We've been able to have rodeos and events and different things like that that come to the Fargo. Big time concerts that we never would have had. That's a quality of life that I think a lot of people like. The problem isn't growth. The problem is how you manage it and what you allow to happen. They say what you tolerate, you condone, and that's really true. We've not just tolerated homelessness in our community, we have fostered it by trying to make things comfortable for those who are homeless in our community. And while I imagine that's virtuous, it doesn't work because you are then incentivizing more things that turn into problems for your community. If you want to take care of your homeless problem, you make it so that this is a difficult place to be homeless. If you want to take care of a crime problem, you make it so that this is a difficult place to commit crimes. If you want to make it difficult for businesses here, you make it difficult to be a business in here by the taxation that you have and different rules and regulations that you have. So Fargo as a whole, I think, has done a lot of good things. But I think the crime piece, the homeless piece, are two important aspects of our community that have not been managed as well as they could have or should have been. Now, would I have done a perfect job? Of course not. But I think at this point, everybody can look back and say, we need to do something different. And sometimes those things sound like you're being quote-unquote mean. The lie of being nice is one that affects a lot of communities. Well, we don't want to be mean to people. Okay, well, then you're going to have a problem. You cannot fix the world, so fix your city. We're not hiring the city of Fargo, the mayor, and the commissioners. We're not entrusting you with fixing humanity and curing homeless people and mental illness. We're not. We're not trying to have you cure people that are struggling in their mental health and so they commit crimes. Those things we're not asking you to fix. We're asking you to run this city. So you got to handle these things in a better way. I am not willing to give up, like our caller Tom said a few minutes ago. Like a lot of people, well, it's out of hand. Can't do anything about it now. What are you going to do? You're always going to be homeless. Your crime is just running rampant. It's always going to be that way. No, it's not going to be that. It's not. It doesn't always have to be that way. The solutions aren't easy, and they're not cheap. But it doesn't have to be that way. And I do not want to give up fighting for these good things. So should the growth of the city be a goal? No. I think the goal of the city should be to run it really well. Have people who run a good police department, who run a good finance team, who run a good public health scene, who run good schools, who run good businesses. You got to have a good chamber. That should be the goal, to make those entities that allow good things to happen, make them as strong as possible so they can create efficiency and they can create health. That's the word. We want a healthy city. I don't care if it's a big city or not, but I want a healthy city. So to me, functionality, feasibility is not the right word. Fiscally successful, okay? Safe, healthy communities, they will become growing communities, but you're not going to have to artificially create incentive then because people will want to be here if you do all of those things. And if you want to get into the economics, you have to have capitalism. And sorry, Zoran, it's not going to work to have a communism in New York City, the economic capital of the country. That's where I come down on it. So I think the goal should be, let's make sure all of our city departments are being run really well, and let's make sure that we are not going to go belly up on the financial side of things. That's a big part of it, too. All right, let's go to the phone lines here, 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. And Hal in Jamestown is on the line today. Hi, Hal.
Hi. Hey, on a much higher level, there are a lot of serious people, minded people in the world that are concerned about conservation, who would say that without question, if there's any city in the United States that should be growing up instead of out, it would be Fargo-Moorhead, because they're sitting on one of the best agricultural soils in the world, and to cover that up with development is almost criminal.
All these buildings, yeah. Yeah. My dad, rest in peace, Roger, I think would look at the Red River Valley too and go, you mean you guys built a big city on half of that river valley? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah, I think it's called American Farmland Trust or something like that. But when you think about it, they sure know what they're talking about.
Mm. Hal, what do you think? Should it be a goal for a city to get bigger? Is that a good thing in and of itself?
Gosh, I don't know about that. I would say that's definitely the goal, to get bigger, no matter what you what your endeavor is. It's just, but here it's more of a physical thing involved rather than the mental thing, you know.
Yeah, yes, sir. Hal, I appreciate you calling. Thanks for hanging out with me on a Friday afternoon, my friend. You have a good weekend, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Hal from Jamestown. That opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. Hal brings up a good point. If you're a bigger city, there's less that can threaten you, right? I mean, if you're super, super small, there, you just don't have the scale to sort of fend off whatever. You know, we have a big flood and your city is, you know, one block wide. Well, then you don't have a city anymore. So I guess in that respect, it matters. And having more of everything, I think, gives you, like, if you like having your kids close to home, if you live in a very, very small town, there's not jobs and industry maybe in a real small town that is going to last, so they have to move away. Well, if you got a bigger economic base and more growth in your community, there's maybe more things for them to move back to do. So there is some benefit, I think, to that. I would say that those things all, though, will kind of just happen on their own if we run the city right and people will want to be here. I mean, look at the way people talk about the Minnesota business climate versus the North Dakota business climate. People say, oh, man, North Dakota, yeah, that's the place to go. Do it. Go on a Fargo side. And I still hear that from people like, yeah, it's hard to do business in Minnesota. Well, that's because they've done things right. So Fargo's economic base has grown. 552, Steve Austin Show. Would love to hear from you on this one. Should we be trying to grow just for the sake of getting bigger? Wonder what you think about that. 271-1100. Hey, a little football talk before we finish up. Did you see what Cam Miller, the former Bison quarterback, did last night in his first NFL preseason game? We'll talk about it next. From the text line, Steve, small town newspapers have to report on local news as they used to. Now on the net, people want to hear about local people and activities, not 24-hour old cut and paste from the web. It means old-fashioned personal reporting. Yep, 100% right. It's got to be news, weather, sports, community happenings, features. It's got to be about the town. You can get the other stuff other places, but they can't get local news from CNN or Fox or anything like that. So it's got to be the local stuff. Appreciate that. Cam Miller, the former Bison, as an undrafted free agent quarterback trying to catch on with the Las Vegas, I still want to call them the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, had a 41-yard touchdown pass last night in his NFL preseason debut. He went 6 of 7 passing for 76 yards and a touchdown in that game there. So good job. He was the third quarterback to play behind Geno Smith and Aiden O'Connell. Cam Miller's one of those guys, man. That guy's going to survive. I think he's going to, I don't know if he'll get a big shot, but he'll get a shot somewhere. I believe that. There's something special about that kid. It'll be fun to see what happens there. All right, Vikings tomorrow. J.J. McCarthy is going to play, 3 o'clock kickoff. I think they're playing Houston. Doesn't matter. Playing somebody. And the Vikings will get a look at their quarterback of the future in the preseason, a reason to watch preseason football. Have a good night, my friend. Keep on flying that flag.